Hello, everybody, and thank you for tuning in to the Liberty Report. With me today is Daniel McAdams, our co-host. Daniel, good to see you.
How are you this morning, Dr. Paul?
Doing well, doing well.
Good.
Ready and raring to go.
That's right.
Trying to clarify a few things. We read these reports, and can you believe there's contradiction in these articles? Even the people who have a position, when they want to do this, then of course on this. And it's hard, you know, to figure out what they're saying. And it's hard to really, you know, come down absolutely sure about the science, because everybody is a true scientist. You know, the government's now the true scientist. CDC, they know everything. WHO knows everything. So they're the gospel, and we're supposed to believe what they say. But all of a sudden, when people do some more decent research, they come up with different views. Like we'll mention Bill Sardi in a little bit, but mm-hmm. Bill Sardi writes for LoseSight, and he is really good. He's actually, he writes like a physician, but he's actually a journalist.
Mm-hmm.
And he gives a lot of good understanding about the measurements and all the tests that he does. But the other thing we're going to talk about today is, an article written by Bob Wenzel, our friend that writes on this subject all the time and on Liberty, Target Liberty.
Yeah.
And he did something neat today. Catching the government or any of these people in contradictions should embarrass them.
Yeah.
It usually doesn't, but we still should point it out because it's sad and it is a contradiction. So he had the idea, well, I'm going to write to OSHA. OSHA is supposed to protect us from dangerous things. I wonder what OSHA is doing to protect the workers, with the problem of the face mask. And he got a sort of a long answer and detailed, and it wasn't to the point. And it's sort of ironic, you know. They compel workers to wear masks, and he's implying by his question that maybe these masks are actually making things worse. And, of course, I tend to think he's right, you know, that they're supposed to protect the worker, and they write all these regulations, and it's ironic because he's talking about CO2, and CO2, boy, that's the nemesis. The environmentalists have to do everything in the world to cut down on the CO2, and now the suggested question he has and the things that we have said is maybe these masks are actually increasing the CO2 and endangering the workers. And I want to read a short sentence from the OSHA answer to this. He asked a couple questions. One question they wouldn't answer, but this one is sort of a long non-answer. But I have one sentence here that sort of tells you the confusion of this whole thing. And of course, they're dealing probably. The people who instigated this whole mess, they're probably not confused. They have an agenda. That is to get everybody else confused and get everybody else to obey. I think that's what they're doing. You do what we tell you, and that's what this mask is all about. But he had a question specifically about the mask. And this is the one sentence I want to read. He says, as the nation's worker protection authority, the agency has said that when workers themselves need protection from infectious disease and other hazards in the work environment, employers need to implement effective control measures, and the cloth masks do not meet that test. So here it is. They're probably, if we're on the right track, they're causing problems. And then if the diseases are getting worse because they're wearing these masks, then it's up to the employer, you know, to deal with it. They don't ever want to assume responsibility and say, hey, you know, maybe we're making a mistake. And then the question they wouldn't answer is, what kind of tests have you done? And everybody knows how to test CO2, and the environmentalists are always using this to over-regulate, and that is so important unless their regulation is making the CO2 much worse. Then somebody might even think, well, I wonder what the comparison is. How much harm have the masks done with CO2, and how much help has the environmentalists been in trying to regulate, the CO2? So it's a contradiction, it's a mess. But I don't think Bob's going to get a real clear answer. But we'll keep plugging along with it.
And the reason why we use the term covering up is because, you know, the fact is we've seen several anecdotal things, and I'm sure you've seen it on YouTube as well. Several people have taken it upon themselves to do a test of what is the oxygen level of the air that they're breathing in when they have a mask on. And there was Del Bigtree down here in Texas did it with his son. There were a couple of people, I think, in Canada and elsewhere. So you're seeing these before YouTube takes them down. You're seeing these tests, and you're seeing a reduction in oxygen intake. Okay, maybe they're not doing the tests right. We don't know. We have no idea. But that certainly raises an issue. Is this something that's going on? And so what Bob did is he just simply said, hey, have you checked into this at all? And it's not like they don't have any resources, Dr. Paul. They have a $500 million budget as of 2015 and 2,265 workers. And guess what their mission is? This is from their mission statement. To assure safe and healthy working conditions for working men and women by setting and enforcing standards and by providing training, et cetera, et cetera. So they're basically their mission is to do something like check and see whether these masks might be causing harm. Yet when Bob Wenzel says, hey, have you tested these? No response, no response, in a blah, blah, blah answer.
But just think about the relationship of this problem to the nursing homes. Because most elderly people, a lot of them at least, they're going to have some emphysema, and they're going to have breathing problems, and they're going to have an asthma. And if they do, and they're not getting their exercise, and they're not getting their vitamin D and all this, so the mask is, if any one of them have been subjected to, what if they're not in a nursing home? Even if they wanted to go out and do normal things and they put a mask on, then they make their problem worse. And maybe that's why that category is the worst one. They already are vulnerable, and everybody recognizes that if you have these preconditions, so that you're going to be in a greater danger. And all of a sudden it is, but they haven't done anything about it. You know, they still do. Instead of saying, well, maybe we should be more cautious about putting people like this in a nursing home, but no, they mandate putting him like they did in New York. And of course, that was when they had a tremendous increase in deaths. And still now, the people in that older age range in nursing homes where they're not getting good treatment. And, you know, the treatment, you know, the way Sardi points this out and the way we've understood it is pretty fundamental.
Yeah.
You know, take your vitamins and get a little exercise. Go out and enjoy the sunshine. You know, and I think that, you know, understanding has been around for a long time, but no, you have to find out remdesivir and put it in and charge them $1,000 for a treatment or something like that. That's more what's on their mind. And I guess they're planning on giving vaccines to these elderly people, too.
Whether they like it or not.
Doesn't make much sense.
Well, it's not like government agencies aren't very keen on barging into our lives. And so why all of a sudden is OSHA so uninterested? But, you know, if you go anywhere and you see workers wearing masks and you go to the store or what have you, they're always complaining. You know, if you catch them in an unguarded moment, they're always complaining to each other. They hate it. Then you go out in the parking lot, and these masks are thrown all around the parking lot anywhere. And if they're so dangerous, then they shouldn't be thrown around everywhere. Pardon me. And, you know, the other thing is our good friend Jeff Harris from South Carolina, good friend and supporter, he did a great piece we have up on the Ron Paul Institute website today saying, why are they forcing us to breathe deadly CO2 gas, you know, classified by the ETA? EPA is CO2 gas. But, you know, I liked Bob's piece, and I like Bob's ingenuity in doing this, and I think it's great. I think he's a little naive, though, because what he says is, why isn't any member of Congress calling the OSHA up here under oath to answer these questions? It's a good answer. It's a good conclusion, Bob. But guess what? They're all in on the program. I can only think of a couple who might be willing to do something
it's
like that.
Part of that bipartisanship we talk about, you know, the pretense that they're at loggerheads. But when it comes to things like this and the bailouts and the lockdowns and the Federal Reserve and all the spending, they know what they're doing. Congress people have been known to lie. And the one thing is under oath doesn't seem to make much difference. The only difference is the turnover in the justice system. The judicial system is more political. So yes, they're all breaking the rules and they're running a country illegally. And the judicial system is just a tool of the political party that has the most clout. And that isn't exactly who's in charge of the White House or the Congress, because the judicial system is sort of ingrained. You don't wave a wand and get rid of everybody.
Yeah.
Maybe that's a good idea. I mean, that's a little bit radical, but that probably would clean house. And then if we followed through and got rid of most of the laws that are unnecessary, it would be quite a bit different.
Yeah, it would indeed. Well, you know, the other thing we want to talk about is our friend Bill Sardi, who, as you point out in the introduction, we follow him a lot. He's got a lot of great ideas about natural healing and natural cures. And he wrote a great piece on the tests. And he calls it, I think he calls it a big con job. And so you have some thoughts on Bill's article on this, I'm sure.
Yes, and he's so good on this testing, and people get confused, as I have on occasion, you know, which test are they going, because they're not explicit. But he separates this out, and he wrote a major article, but the one thing that caught my attention is why the numbers may be inflated. And if they are, it's not an accident. It's usually deliberate to try to fool the people. And he touches on that on one of the ways they get these inflated numbers. And we talk about it all the time: cases versus deaths, and cases, whether it's just a positive test, and which test are they taking. So he said, here's an article, part of that article. He says the CDC admits positives COVID-19 blood tests may only indicate having a prior coronavirus common cold.
Hmm.
Now, wouldn't that be an astounding discovery? Because it probably is true. I think that people do admit this. And the CDC is mixing tests for the virus with tests conducted for the antibodies to come up with a highly inflated number of cases. Because, you know, if the virus test is very inconsistent, and then I could see where they could add these together, like, you know, how they manipulated the numbers on people on death certificates or admissions to the hospital. You know, this thing gets the attention. Don't talk about influenza ever again.
Yeah.
And next year it'll be another virus that you have to be fearful of.
Yeah.
And this second closed lockdown again, it's amazing that people, I thought they were sort of enjoying getting back out again, but they're rolling over. And, you know, Lawrence Vance wrote an interesting article today, which, you know, it's really sad, because he, evangelical Christian, and he writes very critically of the churches not willing to stand up, because and yet understand their emotions and what is happening. But they tell me if people do this, they might die. You know, tremendous pressure, let alone standing up. But if you understand this from a political viewpoint, this whole thing is completely different. That's why this mixture of authoritarianism and our government practicing medicine versus the medical care that happens, this really makes it difficult for people to figure these things out. And it's never happened before. There's never been a time in our history that I know of where they were able to manage, you know, such astounding effect in the whole community, that people got so frightened and terrorized. It's a bit of terrorism, and people are just so frightened by this. And it's not because, and we've used this statistic so often, it's not like, you know, if you get it, you know, you have a 90% chance of dying, you know, or 50% chance of dying, or 10% chance.
Yeah.
What is it? Like
less than one.
Less than one. And but you got to scare people, and people are scared. It's really, really sad. You know, I get upset that they fall for this, but I understand that the propaganda is a powerful tool, and it's usually Republicans and Democrats. I think with Trump's all his shortcomings, I think he's about the only one at the national level. I was a little bit disappointed he put that mask on.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, it wasn't necessary, but the pressure was there.
Pressure's there. It's terrible to see it with that. But the thing about Bill Sardi's writing is that he's able to really cut to the core. And he says a couple of things in this article that I think are so, and it's on lewrockwell.com today, if anyone wants to read it for themselves. But he points out the obvious. The main objective in this whole fight against COVID should be to limit COVID-19 associated deaths, not cases. You don't want to eliminate cases, you want to eliminate deaths. That's the goal of fighting any disease. And he points out that those that are not vulnerable, and young people, and especially young people of good health, are almost immune to this, you know, especially up to the 20s or more. But he says that a COVID infection produces mild to no symptoms, and it also produces antibodies that prevent reinfection in the individual and also prevent further spread of the virus. And that prevention of cases, prevention of this happening, is actually counterproductive. We want people to get it and get over it and move on and become barriers to those that are vulnerable. But that's not what he did. And here's another thing that's really interesting, Dr. Paul, and he put a lot, there's a lot said about South Korea. No country was perfect.
Right.
But what South Korea did is they early on they identified the vulnerable sectors in society, the people who are really susceptible to the disease, the old people, people that are sick. And so what they did is they left the schools open because kids didn't get it, and they helped the elderly and the sick to stay protected. The U.S. did the opposite. They closed the schools where the young people were not vulnerable, and with the older people, they put sick people in with them. You know, it's how can you be so dumb, you know?
And he's satisfied even with the mixed bag about all the testing, you know, and it's the interpretation that sorted out. But he says the last thing we need are more tests.
Yeah.
We don't need more tests. We know and understand basically how this operates. And we need, we need more common sense. You know, in the old days, they wouldn't have been confused with this. You know, they'd have avoided the whole thing of trying to get everybody a test and then lockdown and quarantines and everything else. Even the much worse conditions and worse diseases, they never went through this quarantine. Of course, they were quarantining us, the people who felt good, and then didn't quarantine the others who were the more vulnerable. So it is a mess, and I would say that it's rather typical. Government has too much control, and they don't make mistakes only. They always make mistakes, but they also have sinister motives. There's financial motives. There's political motives, and this ends up in a mess like this. And long term, my biggest beef is the personal liberty is the largest victim, and we're suffering from that too right now.
And Bill ends his column with a very good line, which you just said, which is testing is for fear-invoking headlines, and that's the reason. And he really hits it. And that really brings us to this other point. I have a few graphics to put up that identify and suggest just that. Let's look at the first one. Now, this is what we're seeing a lot of articles written about. As Texas morgues fill up, refrigerator trucks on the way in several counties. And you remember, Dr. Paul, we saw this in April about New York, this line of refrigerated morgue cars lining up. And it's gruesome, and it's grim, and it makes people upset and nervous. Of course, there was the other thing about the mass graves on Hart Island in New York, which it turns out was actually where they buried people for 150 years who had no next of kin. But it's these fear-invoking. And I just took this article because that headline sounds gruesome. Portable morgue, they must be dying in the streets. And I drilled down a little bit, and let's look a little bit at the next one, Dr. Paul. And you find out, where are they talking about these refrigerated trucks and morgues? Well, Austin City and Travis County, the most left-wing, anti-Republican part of the state. They're in the process of procuring a refrigerated truck to face the surge in COVID-19 deaths. The mobile morgue will be placed where there is space for it and where it's needed the most, et cetera, et cetera. It could not confirm when the unit will arrive. Well, that doesn't sound as confident as the headline. And in fact, let's look over to Houston and where we've gone for some sanity, not in the political class, but in the hospital. Let's look at the next one. Because here's what Houston said in response. Spokeswoman for the Harris County Institute of Forensic Sciences said, no extra capacity is needed at the morgue right now. The hospitals are counting on refrigerated trucks to expand their morgue's capacity if needed. They go on to say, Williamson County got a mobile morgue, but they didn't need it, so they sent it back. It'd be easy to add if they need it later on. So the headline's saying, oh my gosh, there's a line of trucks coming in, bringing in dead bodies from people dropping in the streets. You drill down a few paragraphs, and it isn't that severe. And I'll tell you why. And someone did this compiling. This is from the Texas Department of State Health Services' own numbers. Someone put this together in an easy flow chart. But look at this as interesting. The seasonal 2019 flu, 1018 to 1019, 192,000 tests, 10,000 deaths. The COVID-19, 120 to 713, 20 just yesterday, 2,820,000 tests, only 3,235 deaths. So you compare the seasonal flu in 19, in 18, and in 20, and then you look at the COVID-19 deaths in Texas. Why didn't they need morgue trucks through the streets of Houston in this regular flu season?
Is it, right. You know? Well, you know, looking at this from an economic viewpoint, which I can't help but do, we had a bad recession already started before this was, because the bubble had burst and we were facing that. But it was very much compounded by the lockdown and what happened. And this consumed a lot of wealth. People lost their jobs. They have to get their rents paid for, and that's running out. But just think of all that activity. So much as bad as the recession that the Fed created, I mean, it was probably made, at least on the short run, twice as bad, and it cost a lot of money, and yet they continue to do all these tests and manipulation and having morgues they don't need and bringing ships in that are going to take care of thousands of people, converting football stadiums into hospitals. It's all just... it's all rigged. It's so sad that we've gotten to this point.
Someone's making out for sure. But here's a little bit of ironically good news. Our own dear governor was on TV yesterday, and they asked him about, because there's a lot of rumor he's going to shut us back down because, look, these morgue trucks, they're lining up, right? He was interviewed on TV, and we can even put that back up because this is ironically a bit of good news. He tells the TV station, "No shutdown." And I love this, Dr. Paul. Governor Greg Abbott said Texans, quote, would not comply if he issued another shutdown. So he's not going to do it. He's just going to beg the local authorities to force people to put these horrible masks on. But it's a great little realization on the part of the governor. I just can't do this. They're not going to. They've reached their limit, and that's good news.
But there was another governor who said, "Yes, I did that, but they don't even listen to me."
This isn't fair.
So
here's another little bit, because Florida is the other scare state. And here's something I pulled up from CNN this morning, and this just says everything about the use of fear to manipulate the population. Look at this: Florida has more COVID-19 than most countries in the world. These stats show how serious the problem is. And then go to the next one. Oh, it's terrible. Florida's worse than ever. Florida's COVID-19 death toll is like 10 jumbo jets crashing. You know, I mean, this is over the top. And again, when you drill down a little bit, let's go ahead and go to the next. We're just going to go through a couple of these. Here's the CEO of one of the major hospital chains in Florida. He has several hospitals. He has 22,000 employees. He says our ICUs are stocked and prepared. Terry Shaw, his name is, Advent Health. No problems. Go to the next one. This is more in the same article. He says their ICU capacities across the system are running at 85 to 90% capacity. They're prepared to make more space if needed. Adult ICU bed availability across all Orange County hospitals is currently at 24.93%. Shaw added ICU length of stay for coronavirus and death rate have each dropped in half. Dropped in half. It's amazing. And look at this one, Dr. Paul, because this next one is, I just want to close with this part because this shows how political the whole thing is. And this is Alex Berenson, who I urge people to follow on Twitter. He's very sane and very thorough. But he points out, it's a little hard to read, but he says, let's look at the five states with the most cases of coronavirus. Two of these, total population 28 million, have 48,000 COVID deaths. Of course, that would be New York and New Jersey. Two others, population 50 million, have 7,500 deaths, a tiny fraction with much more population. Can you guess which two the media love? ... Or which two have Republican governors? And I'm not a partisan, but you cannot ignore what's happening with the emphasis on Texas and Florida and the fact that in this next election, the person who wins these two states is probably going to take the presidency.
Boy, that's very likely. You know, and the campaign is really working up into a frenzy right now. And this is an issue, but I don't think it's the top issue. It should be one of the top, and it is on, but it's actually looks like it's a problem for Trump, because no matter what happens, he'll get blamed. But the one thing that they have started looking at more carefully is the violence in the street.
Yeah.
I'll tell you what. The Republicans are using that, and as much as we've been critical of how the police has operated and all the laws that are unnecessary and the drug things going on, but just to defund police and let the streets burn, and actually the mayors of the cities just withdraw the hell, they create the problems. The real insult is that happened, and I think this came out of Minnesota, Minneapolis. The cities are burning down and riots. And then they have the audacity to come and say, well, when are you going to send us money to rebuild our cities? And they did nothing. They did everything to encourage it. So that is really just a pretty preposterous of what's happening. But I think that's a political issue. And I think that the way it's going, there's going to be a lot of people who might not speak out about it, but I can't believe that the large majority of American people say, hey, you know, that's a good idea. We like to see them burning down these buildings. Oh, we like to see the people who defended their house with a gun because they didn't want to get shot and their house burned down, and then they get the penalty, they get arrested, and their guns are taken from them. There's something very bad going on there, and I think that people will wake up. And of course, that's what we're trying to do here at the Liberty Report, is wake as many people up as possible and let people to understand that America has been great in the past, not doing so well right now, but there's no reason why we can't change things if we understand how we got here. And one is that we do not have much respect for liberty and the rule of law, and we've gotten to this point where we believe all we have to do is things are tough now, we have a recession and we have all this stuff going on, we just print more money. Well, that's not going to solve it, but we have an opportunity to take advantage of the tragedy that we're facing in saying, you know, this is a time that not only should we think about returning to a point of liberty, refine the understanding of liberty, because I think you can always improve on it. People at times would say to me, Ron, you just want to go back to a gold standard. I don't want to go back to anything, because the gold standard was totally imperfect. Work on a futuristic type of thing, and we can do that. But right now, though, we have a real challenge, and that's what we hope to do here at this program, is to challenge people to participate in this effort to spread the word about peace and prosperity. I want to thank everybody for tuning in today to the Liberty Report. Please come back soon.